Some changes to Will Wade's contract. NFL draft day. A tornado touching down in Ruston, Louisiana. A lot of things to get to on a Thursday afternoon. And we're going to try and get to all of it today. It's a Thursday, April 25th, 2019.
Harden, runner on Gobert. Teardrop good for the beard. He's got 22 up and over the tower. A 9 of 25 shooting. Rockets up a half a dozen.
He is ready on the pitch. A swing and a fly ball left center field. Back goes Pollock. Pollock watches. That ball leaves the yard. It's a home run for Hayward. Cubs lead 6-3. It got up on the wind. His line drive sailed over the 368 sign. Listen to this crowd.
First pitch swinging, pops it to right field. That's a no-doubter to right for Brantley. A two-run shot, it's fifth of the year. And the Astros take a 3-0 lead.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jordy Holtberg Show. CD kind of doing some fill-in work for today over the next 2 hours. We got some great stuff for you today on this Thursday. Of course, we like to have our guy Frank Schwab on Thursdays. We're going to still have him on of the Shutdown Corner, Yahoo Sports. Talk with him about what's going on with the NFL draft. Some of the LSU Tigers are going to be involved. What the Saints could wind up doing. Kyler Murray, apparently his draft stock is dropping according to the guys in the desert. What happens there? What about Greedy Williams? Is he overrated like some of them are saying? What is going on? Going to happen tonight, the craziest night of the year involving the NFL draft. Of course, we got some other stuff to talk about. LSU baseball news and notes from today, right before a big series against the Alabama Crimson Tide. And trust me, there's a lot of things to unpack. And thank goodness I have Brody Miller coming aboard at 2:30 to kind of talk about it all. And of course, we'll kind of change things up a little bit. We usually try and talk a lot about Baton Rouge, New Orleans. It's something that definitely is the meat and potatoes of this area. But I think without a doubt, one of the biggest stories to come out of today is without a doubt what's going on at Louisiana Tech. A big tornado hit. And apparently, this is just coming like in the last hour or so, that reports from the National Weather Service saying it's at least an EF3 tornado that hit Ruston early this morning and caused a whole lot of damage to a lot of athletic facilities at La Tech, along with a lot of other things around the area in Ruston, Louisiana. So we're going to have Corey Diaz of the New Star to kind of talk about that and a whole lot more, what contingency plan could wind up being. And trust me, there's a lot of damage, and we'll get to that with him at 2:15. Outside of that, pretty light show, and we got a lot of things to talk about, though, especially, like I said, during the two-minute drill, about the Will Wade amendments that have been made. Because I think that's definitely the biggest storyline coming out of yesterday that I feel like just kind of recap in case you didn't know about it. And one of the big reasons why Will Wade was reinstated to begin with was because of amendments that were made to his contract that he agreed to, that LSU, one of them being LSU, can fire Wade for a cause if he is found to have committed level 1 or level 2 NCAA violations, or if it's level 1 or level 2. Excuse me. There you go. And then Wade also agreed to waive $250,000 in performance bonuses he contractually earned for this season, 2018-2019, and agreed to not sue the school if he were fired over NCAA violations. From this point on, it seems like it's a relatively clean slate. And in response to a request for the comment, Jason Drotty, the interim vice president for strategic communications for the university, mentioned this, that the amendment to Will Wade's contract represents a strong commitment by Coach Wade to the integrity of the institution and to his continued cooperation and partnership with LSU. We are pleased that we were able to come to this agreement as we move forward in this process. That's huge when you think about it with LSU basketball getting him there, and it's all kind of resetting everything at this point. And that's a big thing because I know everybody wants to support Will Wade in every way possible, and the whole fire Joe Oliva, especially after the suspension of Will Wade, I mean, you couldn't really do anything about that at that point. I feel like that was just kind of the tipping point of the Joe Oliva era coming to an end because everybody wanted him out for quite a while, myself included, more so because he shouldn't have been there in the first place. The guy kind of ran a little bit of a mess of a program over in North Carolina with the whole Duke situation. All that happened. So Joe Oliva from the jump shouldn't have been a part of LSU, but, you know, they handled it the quickest way possible in the hiring of Scott Woodward. And then this kind of came out yesterday. And I'm kind of glad, you know, because we finally kind of get, I'd say, a complete conclusion to the entire Will Wade saga that's been going on for what seems like months on end. I think from back in October, November, once the first Yahoo Sports report came out, and then, of course, right before they won the SEC regular season title, more comes out. When they advance to Sweet 16, even more comes out. It's a bad look, and then we wind up kind of finding out they're not having to testify at the trial. That could possibly change, but I highly doubt it at this point. It's Thursday afternoon. I haven't heard anything about it from that perspective, so that's a really good thing to hear, that you won't have to have him testify in front of a federal trial. Yes, that winds up changing a lot of things, because he's going to have to be upfront and honest. So that could wind up giving the NCAA enough firepower to basically say, hey, you've got level one or level two violations, and then they've got to fire Will Wade with cause in this situation. So I think it's going to be good for Will Wade and this program for the time being. Will Wade is pretty much a clean slate. Everything's kind of reset at this point when it comes to his future. At least the way I just think about it. Of course, that could be different now that you've got the new AD, you've got Scott Woodward, who definitely doesn't take any, you know, any mess, if you will. I mean, you look at what happened with Kevin Sumlin towards the end. The guy helped bring this program, this football program, to the SEC and be able to get them towards some great heights right out the jump with a win over Alabama. And then you weren't able to capitalize on it. You weren't able to finish the job. You weren't able to be consistent winners, especially against that team from Baton Rouge. And that's why Texas A&M has Jimbo Fisher, and they swung big and kept swinging until they got him. It wasn't just like, oh, hey, you know, we want you. No, I'm going to stay here. And then he winds up leaving the next year because he realizes that the boat's kind of sinking at this point. I think it definitely is a valid point of view when you look at the LSU Tigers and when you look at Texas A&M, what they've done with the hiring of Jimbo Fisher. They swung and they got their guy. And it's going to be fun to see what happens with LSU and Texas A&M on the football field. But with Scott Woodward, the new AD, that could wind up being, hey, like if you don't perform at a certain level, we could wind up firing you, especially if we know that there's a formal notice that could be issued by the NCAA for those level one or level two violations. And that is where kind of things get a little more interesting. And speaking of Scott Woodward, this is another big news story coming out of LSU. We finally got the details thanks to the Advocate kind of filing a Freedom of Information Act and getting the deeds about the contract, and it's 6 years, $7.95 million, and it starts at $1.1 million per year and then increases to $1.5 million during its final year. So basically, it increases by year, and I like that idea a lot. And then you've got the contract. It also includes a liquidated damages payment to Texas A&M worth $50,000, and this contract is going to be started on May the 6th, and then April 30th, 2025 is when it ends. That's a long time to be the athletic director for this program as an initial deal, but I think this is what you needed to do to lock him down, because I feel like if you didn't give him a six-year, almost $8 million, you could have wound up not having a guy like that. You might have had to wait a little bit longer to get somebody like that, because I feel like Scott Woodward knows what he's worth and wanted to come back to Louisiana, but you weren't going to get them on the cheap. You weren't going to get the, like we talk about all the time when it comes to contracts involving like franchises and players that have been there for a long time, the hometown discount. I'm sorry, you're not getting the hometown discount with a guy like that. You got the hometown discount with Coach O, but that's because I think Coach O, he kind of wanted to kind of set things up so he can stay there for a good while. I think this is a huge step in the right direction for LSU to get Scott Woodward. I know we've talked about it a lot over the last week or so, the hiring of him. But after I heard him earlier this week with his introductory press conference, I am sold this guy's probably going to be one of the best choices LSU's had in a long time in terms of hiring. This is a top dog that I cannot wait to see him succeed 2019 and beyond, because he's going to wind up making this athletics program from top to bottom, not just football, not just baseball, but basketball, women's basketball, softball, which is already pretty darn good, make them even better because there's going to be so many more resources allocated towards them. And I like all that I heard from him, especially when he was talking about sports betting. I think that's definitely the next thing that's going to wind up happening. And him talking about it didn't endorse it, obviously so, because you got your employer right there. But I think that could wind up being a huge step in the right direction for the state of Louisiana. But him talking about it openly, I think that makes things a little bit more interesting just in terms of the political landscape of things. And I cannot wait to hear more about it. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back. We got a whole lot more coming up for you. Again, Corey Diaz coming up in just a few minutes to kind of talk about the La Tech tornado that happened last night in Ruston. Definitely something that happened. It was just a tragedy. And what's going to be happening next with them? Brody Miller talking to LSU at 2:30. And then at 3:30, we'll have Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports talking the NFL draft. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. By the way, we're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We'll be back.
Whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Hultberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Clint Doman kind of doing some fill-in work for him today. Hopefully you're enjoying it just as much as I am bringing it to you. And now we're going to switch over from LSU. We'll get back to that in a little bit at 2:30. But in this segment, we got to kind of change things up in a different sense, talking about what happened last night, or early this morning, I should say, over in Ruston. A tornado touched down near La Tech's campus and wound up causing some major structural damage to a lot of different venues over at La Tech. And we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more with Corey Diaz of the Monroe News Star. He's on the Arco Equipment Hotline right now. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. How's it going, guys?
It's going good. You know, what's the current situation right now in Ruston? Is it starting to calm down a little bit more now that everything's kind of, like, settled down after that tornado that happened early this morning?
Sure, yeah. The storm, from the officials that I've spoken with today, the estimation is at about 1:50 a.m. This morning, the tornado touched down. I mean, literally, and you can see it just from the damage of walking through. I mean, it literally looks like the tornado, when it came down from the atmosphere, it looks like it landed right on top of, you know, the soccer stadium, the softball stadium there at Louisiana Tech, and it's caused some pretty catastrophic damage, especially to those two athletic facilities. Both of them are a total loss. The tennis courts, they're going to have to completely redo the tennis courts at Louisiana Tech. The track and field surface sustained some damage, but for the most part, I think they'll be able to salvage it. As the Raging Cajuns have become familiar with over the years, you know, the Love Shack, J.C. Love Field there, sustained some pretty significant damage as well. The overhang there that hangs above the stands, it's not sound. And we spoke with Athletic Director Tommy McClellan earlier today. He categorized the Love Shack as the most dangerous area on campus right now, just from that overhang. There's two separate portions of it that partially collapsed. Some of the concrete ended up in the stands. Some of the concrete ended up in the intersection behind the baseball stadium, the intersection there of Alabama and Tech Drive, which means that this storm was pretty significant in terms of intensity. The latest report I saw was about 35, 40 minutes ago at the National Weather Service out of Shreveport, was estimating that the intensity of the storm that came through this morning was at least an EF3 storm. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, you're walking around town now. You know, there's clouds in the sky, but you can see the blue sky. You can see the sun. You know, and another big silver lining in this whole matter is there were only two lives lost, which is a really, really terrible thing. But in terms of students on campus at Louisiana Tech, there were no casualties. There were no injuries that have been reported. All the students and student athletes have been reported safe, which is really remarkable considering I know a bunch of your listeners have been to the Love Shack. There's apartments there just literally right on the other side of left center field fence, which is completely gone now, by the way. But those apartments that are behind the baseball, the outfield fence, are completely okay. There's just a little bit of roof tiling that has been removed off of the one that was nearest to the baseball stadium. But other than that, zero structural damage at all. All the inhabitants inside are completely safe and sound. So there's some big silver linings you know, that's come out of today and what has happened at Louisiana Tech University.
There really is a lot of silver linings, and you brought it up perfectly. Talk right now with Corey Diaz of the Monroe News Star. But looking specifically at softball, last night the Raging Cajuns and La Tech faced off in a 7-2 win for the Cajuns at the softball complex. A few hours later, this happens. And then now you've got a three-game set coming up against Western Kentucky is scheduled for Ruston, Louisiana. So my question is, what's kind of the contingency plan right now to have this series take place, or could this wind up getting scrapped?
Right, yeah, and that's a good question. As of this moment, there has not been anything official that has been figured out just yet. But earlier when we talked to Tommy McClellan, he did say that they're working on plans to either have the Conference USA series with Western Kentucky. Ideally, they're trying their best to do it locally here in the city of Ruston. Because it's going to be, you know, it's their last series of the regular season. That means you get all the senior day festivity stuff, and it's really important for the program to be able to do that as close to home as possible. And so right now they're looking at either trying to host the three game series with Western Kentucky either at Cedar Creek School, that's literally, you know, less than 3 miles from Louisiana Tech's campus, or they might even be able to go closer to that and host the series at Ruston High School, which is not even a stone's throw away from the softball stadium in and of itself already. So you kind of have to, you know, by NCAA protocol, you know, the stadiums, the facilities there would have to, you know, they have to be cleared, so they have to meet a certain criteria. They're hoping by later on this afternoon to be able to officially announce something on that in terms of where the Lady Texters and the Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky will be playing this weekend.
And, you know, we're talking about La Tech softball. Moving over to La Tech softball La Tech baseball. They're actually on the road this weekend against Rice. What could be the contingency plan for them? I mean, you bring it up about softball possibly being a high school baseball stadium. Has there been any idea of what could happen on that end, or is it going to be much the same when you look at baseball compared to softball?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be kind of much of the same. The good thing, one of the good things about the situation with the baseball stadium and the baseball program at the moment is, you know, they are in fact on the road. That gives the athletic administrators a little more time to figure out what their contingency plan is going to be. Going forward, you know, Tech's only got, you know, their baseball team only has a handful of home games left this season, so. You're not having to try to figure out what to do with the next 2.5 months. You're really just trying to figure out what you're going to do for the next, 2 weeks, which is, you know, one of those other silver linings of what transpired today. But, Tommy said that, he had, He had heard from, officials over at Grambling State, which, is 4 miles up the road. They needed, facilities for practice or for games or anything. Grambling State would help out their neighbor in any way that they could. They've heard from ULM, too, which is 30 miles up the road on I-20. Rival usually in any other day, but today, we've really kind of seen this all day long. It's kind of been just everyone dropping what they're doing to help everyone else. And, being on campus this morning and seeing the destruction, seeing the damage, and then being able to see, people stop what they're doing to help their fellow man, their fellow neighbors, some of the most important stuff that I've seen all day today.
And, you bring that up, talk right now with Corey Diaz, the Monroe News star. That just sounds Louisiana as Louisiana can be. Everybody kind of chipping in to be able to try and get past this process as much as possible, be able to move on life after this tragedy that happened, hitting La Tech. Thankfully, like you mentioned, I say thankfully, but we all know what I mean there. It's like it wasn't as bad as it could have been, especially with an EF3 tornado hitting around that area. But you want to put a lot of pictures up on your Twitter. You can follow Corey Diaz on Twitter at @CoreyDiaz_TNS. And amazingly, the football stadium was spared from any of the damage. How far away is that between that and the soccer stadium that's pretty much, as you put it, just destroyed beyond recognition?
Yeah, I would say maybe 120 paces. So, you're looking at, not even a tenth of a mile away. It's legitimately, on the south side of Joe I.A. Stadium. If you go out the south end zone of the stadium there, you'll be able to see, or you could have been able to see, the soccer complex. And then what's even fascinating about this too is that you look to the southeast, but on the same side of the road is where Louisiana Tech's tennis courts were located, and their tennis courts, sustained a lot of damage today. So it was crazy how you can just kind of walk the line of damage, and you can see, you can visibly see where the edge of the tornado that hit, where it stopped and where it began. It's one of the most surreal things I've ever seen. Thankfully, not anything wrong at all with Joe I.A. Stadium. The football stadium is good, but literally stone's throw away from that, you've had, you got three other athletic facilities that are literally within a block of that football stadium that are total losses.
Corey, can't thank enough for coming on in this kind of situation. We'll definitely talk to you down the road whenever we need to kind of get an update on that, and also La Tech Bulldogs stuff in general.
Yeah, man, sounds great. I'll be glad to join you guys anytime you need me.
All right, that was Corey Diaz of the News Star. Once again, you follow him on Twitter at @CoreyDiaz_TNS to get the latest involving La Tech football, baseball, all sports involved, also a little Grambling as well. But we got to hurry up and take a quick commercial break. We'll be back with Brody Miller talking LSU baseball. A lot of changes are happening right now, and we'll give you the latest on that next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7TheGame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back to the Jordy Hultberg Show. Clint Domingue filling in for him on a wonderful Thursday afternoon. A little bit better than what I thought it would have been, considering all the weather that came that was going to be threatening the state of Louisiana. It went more north, sadly, and we talked with Corey Diaz about that in the last segment. We'll have that up on demand before you know it. But we got to turn things over once again to LSU, but more on the baseball side of things, because a lot of stuff has kind of come to light over the last couple hours. And to talk about it, we got to go with Brody Miller. He's on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, ARCO Equipment Hotline from NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. Brody, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. How about yourself?
I am doing pretty good, and definitely has been a busy Thursday afternoon, especially when you look at LSU baseball, a pitching shakeup that wasn't, And it looks like now Zach Hess is going to be the starter. Cole Henry won't be pitching at all. So we can give us the deets on that.
Yeah, kind of pulmonary dropping some surprises on us. Yeah, so the plan was in place. You know, Zach Hess was on board. Cole Henry was on board. Everyone agreed on it that, you know, Zach Hess was going to go back to the bullpen and Cole Henry was going to become the Friday night starter, which is, you know, pretty shocking news considering, first off, I would argue Zach Hess has pitched really well this year. And secondly, I mean, Pulmonary has been adamantly clear since June 1st, since the first postseason interview last year, that Zach Hess would be the Friday night starter and he would not go to the bullpen all year. He repeated that time and time again. And right when it looked like this was about to happen, Cole Henry now has been dealing with some tendonitis in his elbow. It's not expected to be anything serious. He's been feeling better each day. And an MRI Wednesday night, and there was no ligament damage or nothing scary there. So it's not necessarily a long-term thing, but it does push back the idea of them making this huge move there.
It's a huge move, Brody. And, you know, just thinking about it right now, the way things are set up for LSU and Zach Hess going to be the Friday night starter and him potentially moving to the bullpen hypothetically next weekend. We'll talk about that in a moment. But just looking at Zach Hess and the decision to put him back in the bullpen, do you think that's more because of, like, his injury to his groin a couple weeks ago? Or is this more of, oh, hey, we want to try and be able to win these Friday night games?
You know, that's a really good question. I think there's a part of it that is the matter of Cole Henry is the best pitcher, you know, on this team right now, and there's no real denying that. And I think it starts there. But I also think, you know, Pulmonary is, you know, 13 years of a track record here of just really trying to – he's not thinking about this week. He's always – everything he does is thinking about how are we going to win the College World Series in June. That is his plan. And, you know, there has been this just really weird situation with this pitching staff that because it's been injured, it's been able to kind of avoid some of these – this kind of issue that would be a thing of, hey, this team has so many arms in theory if they're healthy – that you got to figure out how to use them all and how can you get the best out of all of them, because that is tricky, because, you know, Landon Marceau is in theory a guy who could be a star in the pitching staff, and who knows if Jaden Hill is going to be back, and then what do you do with, like, Chase Costello, and, you know, it seems like you have, like, six, like, Mikhail Hilliard even, all these starting caliber arms, and then you're still trying to figure out your bullpen. I think this was a matter of this would make LSU better in June if Landon Marceau is ready to go, or even Todd Peterson actually was being played with as a pitcher. If you have that and then you have Zach Hess coming out of the bullpen with Devin Fontenot and Matthew Beck and a lot of these arms you have, that's a really scary bullpen. So I think it's a little bit of Henry should be the Friday night guy and LSU might be a better overall baseball team with Hess being locked down in the bullpen.
Talk right now with Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times who's picking you and covers LSU baseball on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, looking at LSU's rotation, of course, Sunday, it's to be announced. It seems as expected, especially with everything going on with Cole Henry. But who could wind up being the starter on Sunday? Because it feels like they could wind up having a lot of options, especially if Friday night shakes out the way they want it to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's put it this way. Pulmonary was asked directly if they're going to save any arms Friday and Saturday to try to have somebody available. And they basically said, you know, with these injuries, they really can't afford to right now because they need to have those bullpen guys Friday and Saturday. The only person who is definitely not pitching Friday and Saturday is Landon Marceau. And part of that is because he also just threw three innings on Tuesday. But also, I think they like the idea of having that one ace in the hole. So, I mean, you had to put money on it. I'd probably put my money on Landon Marceau starting. But you have a lot of options there. You know, Todd Peterson actually went to Pulmonary directly and said he wants to get that start. He wants to kind of step up and take that. But Maneri had to tell him that, you know, we genuinely need you Friday and Saturday. We can't risk that. But, you know, say Todd Peterson doesn't throw that much Friday and Saturday. You know, he could be somebody to go with there. You can go with Mikhail Hilliard there. Yes, but you can go with, you know, even Devin Fontenot doesn't seem that crazy to me if they don't use him too much Friday and Saturday. But yeah, if I had to put money on anything, I think Marceau's your best bet there because, one, he has a history of being a starter, and, two, he pitched really well on Tuesday.
Now, with Todd Peterson, you're talking about he wanted to start. Now, did he want to start as a pitcher or did he want to start as DH, hypothetically?
Yeah, no, I like it. I believe as a pitcher, yeah, which is interesting because Pulmonary also kind of told us off to the side after the press conference that, you know, we asked him, okay, but the part you didn't answer was if you made that move and put Hess in the bullpen, who would you want to be that third starter? Because that's the part that's kind of been left out there. And, you know, he said, you know, Marceau would be one. If he looks good enough, they'd like him to be that third. But he said the other one he would have toyed with this weekend would have been Todd Peters. So I think that's really interesting. That's the swap that nobody would have seen coming, is the idea that there was a chance that it basically would have been a Hester-Peterson bullpen to starting swap. That's the shocking thing.
That is shocking. I mean, you think about it, like Todd Peterson is kind of their closer. And mind you, Zach Hess definitely knows what it's like in that role. We saw him last weekend against Florida. And I think that might have all, we talk about with Zach Hess a lot extensively in this segment, largely because that's been the biggest story, him moving back to the bullpen. We saw him kind of get some time under the sun like last weekend and as a relief pitcher. And we got to see that Zach Hess of old. He looked like he was just on fire. Maybe that was kind of a wake-up call for Maneri, kind of remembering how good he can be as that bridge guy, relief guy, however you want to wind up putting it.
No, that's absolutely the case, and Paul Maneri did admit that. But yeah, he saw how he looked on Sunday, and yeah, he was definitely impressed with kind of how he looked out of that role. And it's also worth mentioning that Todd Peterson hasn't quite been LSU's closer for about a month now. You know, Devin Fontenot is kind of taking that role, and but I would also argue Fontenot's at his best as like that, you know, 6-7-8 kind of guy, that kind of long relief guy. So you know, it's a lot of it comes down to how can you get the best out of this team, and also there's an argument to be made that you know. It's higher leverage innings having Zach Hess come in kind of in the middle or later in a game. You know, that's kind of, it just kind of fits him better. But also, I mean, I think Marceau would be a starter before Peterson. It's just interesting that that is actually a consideration.
Talking right now with Brody Miller, NOLA.com and the Times Picayune, looking at Cole Henry and his recovery process. What's the likelihood of this change kind of coming into effect next weekend, especially considering the fact that there is no midweek game this week?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's tricky because I think in general they'd probably be a little timid about making this big move with like while still like Henry being fully recovered. You know, you might want another week of knowing Henry's back to what he was. And I don't know this, this is just me speculating, but it's possible they could do it that quickly. But my guess would be, okay, Henry had just had a week off. You're not sure how he's going to look again after this injury. You might want one more weekend of that Hess-Henry-Walker rotation. And then if Henry looks like himself again on Saturday, then the next week you feel pretty good about making that change.
Talking now with Brody Miller, NOLA.com, and the Times-Picayune. And just now we got to kind of talk about some of the other guys that have been injured. Not necessarily on the pitching staff, but LSU's had like a mass unit, it feels like, for the last month or so of the season. What's kind of an update on some of the other guys that are injured? Could some of them be coming back for this weekend series against Alabama?
Funny thing is, the story I went into this morning planning on writing before we knew this news was, hey, LSU's lineup's about to be healthy for the first time in God knows how long, and they're actually going to be oddly deep, which has been the opposite of this past month, because Chris Reed is expected to be back after a hamstring injury took him out 5 of the last 6 games. He's expected to start at third base. Zach Watson is fully recovered from his groin injury that kept him out 5 of the last 6 games, but he basically came down with either a virus or the flu or something like that yesterday. He'll be traveling separately tomorrow to Tuscaloosa so nobody gets sick. And pulmonary doubts he'll be in the lineup tomorrow night. But in general, he might be able to play this week, and that's not a major concern. You know, you got Giovanni DiGiacomo, so I think they're okay with that. And then you get, you know, Hal Hughes is on his way back. He might not be able to hit, but, you know, he could at least play some defense if you need him to in a pinch. And then the big one pulmonary is excited about is Gavin Duga, a freshman infielder in Oklahoma that, you know, he's missed basically the last almost pretty much 2 months now with a torn ligament in his thumb that took him out. And it's kind of, he's a really interesting one because he got one start at first base at the end of February, played really well in that game. I think went like 2-for-4 with an RBI single that was really clutch, and Pulmonary was really high on him. And then the next day he's out for 2 months. So, and Pulmonary these past like 4 weeks has just kind of been slowly, but surely, subtly kind of pumping him up as, hey, I don't think we're talking enough about how big not having Gavin Duga is and how much he'd be able to help our depth if we had him available and all these things. And now, but it's kind of weird because it's hard to really buy into that when we've only really seen him play one real baseball game this season. But he will be back this weekend. Just really a long story short, he will be back this weekend. The implication is there's a good chance he DHs is kind of this whole weekend, because I think their idea is kind of if you're going to do it, let him really get comfortable. So there's a good chance he could DH. He's also, you know, a second baseman. I think could, you know, play some first base if they ever desperately need him to. He's very versatile. So, yeah, having him back will be one of the more interesting storylines of the weekend, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you talk about Duggar, I think he will wind up probably fitting well in the DH spot because you don't want to take away some of the guys that have wound up hitting extremely well, namely one guy and one guy only, and that's Cade Beloso, the guy who's just been raking at this point in the season. You don't want to take him out of there. Probably don't want to wind up taking out – obviously, you're not going to take out Duplantis, but I feel like if you're going to want to just not take out anybody, I think he's – Beloso is one of the guys you don't want to take out the lineup because he's definitely got the hot bat at this moment.
Absolutely, and I completely agree. And that's been the really funny thing is that – I meant to get to this – is that it's like they've been so beat up, and they had one free bench player the last 2 weeks, and they were so injured. And now all of a sudden you've had all these guys kind of step up that weirdly they're deeper than they've been all season – because suddenly Drew Bianco's got some things figured out, and C.J. Willis looks like a quality hitter, and Cade Beloso is back on track and on fire lately. And, you know, Brent Broussard's actually done some kind of nice things, so suddenly you have a lot more options than you would have had because going off the lineup, we assume it's going to be this weekend. If it's Duggar DH, then Willis and Bianco both aren't in the lineup, and those are two guys that they definitely probably trust right now. So it is kind of funny how that works. But, yeah, definitely, you're not taking Cade Beloso out of that lineup. But so they have a lot of options now. And also another thing is it just gives you, you know, just to bring up the example of Bianco, you know, now they have another right-handed bat. That's been something they've really been missing. So if Bianco's actually figuring some things out at the plate, you're just getting more and more options.
Brody, thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, absolutely, no problem. Take care.
All right, that was Brody Miller. You can follow him on Twitter at Brody A. Miller. You can follow him on there to keep up with what's going on with the LSU Tigers heading into this weekend. It's going to be an interesting one when they take on the Alabama Crimson Tide. You'll hear it all right here on 103.7 The Game, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all three games right here on Acadiana Sports Station. And I think it's going to be a fun series. Hopefully LSU can get things going this weekend and really start making a push towards getting that 20 SEC wins mark. Because I think you hit that mark, obviously, you make a really strong case for yourself to be in contention as a national seed and hosting a regional and a super regional, because I feel like that's the easiest way for you, if you're LSU, to make it to Omaha. And if you don't make it to Omaha, this whole season has been kind of a waste, in my opinion. And I think what we're seeing with LSU and the move for Cole Henry is huge. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Come back with more. You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show with Clint Doeming. Doing some fill-in work right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Acres and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show. Clint Doeming doing a little fill-in work for him on this Thursday afternoon. And my goodness, great interview just now with Brody Miller talking LSU baseball. And a lot of things are changing right now with them. And definitely feels like it's been all season long. The card is subject to change. And the lineup is always subject to change when you look at LSU, especially over the last couple of weeks. It feels like things have just been changing left and right. And the thing changing Zach Hess, that wound up being the biggest surprise of the day involving all the announcements that Paul Maneri made. I mean, mind you, that was just – it felt like that was going to happen eventually, but I don't think at this point in the season you would have seen that coming by a country mile because of the fact that it feels like when you look at Zach Hess is a really, really good pitcher. He can do really well. But he's largely just a guy that's going to wind up getting the job done for you. But he works best as a bullpen guy. And like I talked with Brody, I felt like you saw that a lot more last weekend whenever it was LSU Florida in that series finale where he wound up coming in as a relief pitcher and he looked really, really good. I think that's a huge step in the right direction for him and leaves Sunday open for a lot of guys. And Landon Morris, so I think that's the biggest reason why he brought him up as a potential guy to fill that gap for one reason only. That's because he works extremely well as a starter, and you don't have to worry about that midweek game anymore, at least for this weekend. Then you got like next week, you've got next, I think it's the month, May the 7th, you've got the La Tech Bulldogs taking on LSU at Alec Box Stadium. Thankfully, of course, as we mentioned in the last segment, a big at 2:15, we mentioned a big tornado hit Ruston, Louisiana, towards La Tech's campus and kind of tore up several facilities. And it's just, it's a tragedy to see all that happen over the last, let's say, 12 hours or so that happened. That was about, like you said, I think it was like 1:45. All that happened, baseball stadiums destroyed, softball stadiums destroyed, a lot of damage. It is crazy. And I just saw this pop up. This is coming from Corey Diaz, actually. La Tech alumni put this out. There's actually a link that you, if you would like to donate to La Tech, I'm going to give you that information right now. If you want to help them out, and trust me, anything can wind up helping out, you can go to La Tech's Twitter account. It's, they actually have it up, La Tech alumni, at LA Tech alumni on Twitter. They have a link up there to where you can donate and give at their disaster relief efforts. It's called ltu.al/disaster relief. And I have to say, this is awesome to see La Tech alumni kind of do this to try and help the recovery process as soon as possible, because this could wind up taking up to a year to see some of these buildings, some of these facilities back to as close as normal as possible. I mean, I saw some of the pictures of the stadium, and it was a mess. Things were just torn apart. I was amazed that you had people actually going there to take pictures, because it just feels like that's like a dangerous area to be in after a storm, especially the Love Shack, as Corey Diaz mentioned, was just an absolute mess. Of course, we got a lot more things to get to outside of kind of the negative. We can talk about a lot more of the positives, and I think one of the positive things is that we get the NFL draft to look forward to today. It is draft day, of course, if you're a fan of the New Orleans Saints. You're going to be waiting an extra day, more likely than not, to see who you're going to wind up picking. I feel like you're going to stick with the 62nd pick overall. If you're going to trade up, it's going to be in the third round. I'm not a fan of it, but I feel like that's where you're going to wind up looking towards, because you don't want to sacrifice your 2020 first round pick or another like big early round pick that can wind up being a starter for you down the line. I think you're hedging your bets and just going to go ahead and give up a couple of your later round picks for a really decent third round pick. A high third round, I think, would be where you'd want to be if you're the New Orleans Saints, to be able to get something really, really good out of it rather than have to deal with your last day and hope upon hope you can get another Marcus Colston or another Will Clapp that you just don't know if they're going to wind up panning out in the way you want it to. You look at the Saints over the last few years, they've been able to do pretty well in later rounds of the draft under the Sean Payton era, but I don't think you can say, hey, they're going to wind up just relying on that 90% of the time if you want to wind up winning in this league. I think that's definitely something you need to keep an eye on over the next 24 to 48 hours in terms of what the Saints do. Of course, we could talk about it, and I'll probably talk about it a lot more in the next segment, about Devin White, Greedy Williams, two players, more likely than not, are going to be in the first round of the NFL draft. They're going to get picked tonight, and we get to see them. It's going to be awesome. I'll just say that. It is going to be absolutely amazing to see those two guys get picked up in the first round. I think those are your only two that are going to wind up being in there. You might see some other Louisiana natives involved in it. Irv Smith is definitely one of those guys who's a Louisiana native from Brother Martin High School. I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on tonight. But outside of that, you don't have a whole lot of interest if you're a Saints fan, because after all, your guys aren't going to be picking. And honestly, I wouldn't want to pick in the 29th pick. So I think the trade for Marcus Davenport, on the surface at least, worked out. Of course, Sean Payton probably wants to get something really, really good in that second round. And I think 62nd is towards the tail end of it, but I think you'd still at least contend and get a decent guy to be a starter. And I think the way you would want to go is offensive line, and there's probably going to be some offensive line guys available. And I think you've got to try and figure out what your center situation is going to be, because I'm not all in on Cameron Tom or Will Clapp at this point, because they haven't proved to me anything, really. That's the biggest thing. And we'll talk about that a lot more with our guy Frank Schwab in hour number two of two right here on the Jordy Holbrook Show. Clint Domingue doing some filling work for him on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7TheGame.com. and also streaming around the world on our free mobile app presented by Visit Avery Island. Back with more after this.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Kinda. Welcome back to hour number two of the Jordy Hultberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Not exactly hot topics time, but it's time to kind of recap some of the big topics of the day. Because trust me, a lot of things are moving around. Of course, it is NFL draft day. Where are Greedy Williams and Devin White going to go? I was definitely surprised. I want to kind of finally catching up on a lot of stuff involving the Florida Network and their coverage of the NFL draft. And I have to say, I was surprised to see where Greedy Williams was towards the end of the first round. It feels like to me, and again, you know, if you want to listen to 1037 Game on Saturday, I want to give out my entire first round of the mock draft, and I have both players going in the top 10. Because I feel like Greedy Williams is probably one of the best cornerbacks in this draft class. And I feel like if you wind up picking him, your franchise is going to be all the better for it. And I felt like he was going to wind up going towards the top five, and you have Devin White kind of round out that top 10. Because it feels like Devin White, there's not as much in terms of team needs. And that's the way I look at things in terms of a mock draft. I'm not a big fan of best player available. I'd much rather try and get a guy that can make an immediate impact at the position that you absolutely positively need. And I feel like the Denver Broncos are that team that needs an inside linebacker badly. And I feel like that's where they're going to wind up landing. And Greedy Williams, I wound up checking out some stuff from WalterFootball.com, which is one of my favorite places to go this time of year to kind of see mock drafts, your position rankings, how that kind of goes and whatnot. Because, again, you know, I look at it from a perspective of needs. I just don't like best player available because the best player available might not necessarily fit into your game plan going forward. Sure, you know, I'm not sure the New Orleans Saints were really looking for a second running back when you look at what happened with Alvin Kamara a couple years ago, and it didn't hurt matters. Mind, that was a third-round pick. I feel like your best player available situation, that strategy pays off, works out a lot more in your third round and in your day three type picks as well. Because your first three rounds, your first round especially, should be the biggest need that you need to address that you didn't address at this point in time in free agency. The Saints addressed, for the most part, a lot of their needs. The only thing they really need to focus in on is, I talked about it in an hour, is a center. I think that's the biggest thing. We talk about offensive line till the cows come home, but to get more specific, I feel like a center needs to be the answer to the question of what do the Saints need to do going forward, heading into the draft, and what do they need to do to be able to succeed going forward. And I feel like that's the way you need to go, and I think you can get a guy like that with your 62nd overall pick. It'd be great to get a tight end, but I feel like your tight end position is pretty much locked down because Josh Hill, he's not a great receiver, but he's definitely a good blocking tight end, and then Jericho is a little bit of best of both worlds in that sense. And I think all that being said, I got to say that Devin White and Greedy Williams are pretty interesting to keep an eye on because I feel like with what we're seeing with Greedy Williams, is it's surprisingly how crazy it's been that he's overrated. I don't get why that's a thing. I don't get why they're calling him an overrated player. I think he's rated perfectly fine. You know, he's coming from one of the best conferences in all of college football, the SEC, which to some it's NFL light. And how do you downgrade a guy like that towards the bottom of the NFL draft? And a lot of these mocks that I've seen lately, I been shocked to see how far some of these guys have gone. In fact, I'm pulling up right now. I'm going to go ahead and drop it now with them, the Walter Football, some of their draft picks, because it's amazing to see where some guys are going to go. To see where a guy like Greedy Williams could wind up going. I'm seeing some like Devin White, according to WalterFootball.com, going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, Greedy Williams might not even make it to the second, might not make it past like the top 16 picks. And that's a mind blow to me right now if you're a fan of. Like, they haven't gone to 31 to the Los Angeles Rams, which it's crazy to think that some of these mock drafts have him that low. He's probably one of the best cornerbacks in a lot of the rankings, but apparently the word on the street is, you know, he's not good. He's not that great. He's overrated. How is he overrated? That's the question I have to ask all of them. I think the most overrated player in the first round is without a doubt Daniel Jones coming out of Duke. That guy is overrated. I think a lot of people are pumping him up, pumping the thing like crazy that he's going to wind up being the 16th or 17th pick to the New York Giants. I'm sorry, but if they want to get a quarterback that's going to wind up helping them out down the line after Eli Manning hangs it up finally or gets peeled off the field because that offensive line is absolute trash, I think you need to focus in on your first pick being, guess what, a quarterback. And I think a guy that needs to be in that conversation is Dwayne Haskins at number 6. I think he's a guy that I'd absolutely love to see for the New York Giants going forward, and then you can focus in on bolstering an offensive line because that's another big issue for the Giants. And both New York teams have a lot of holes to fill, but I feel like if you fill in one or two of those holes, you wind up looking pretty darn good at this point in time if you're a fan of either of those teams. I think this is going to be a big deal for the New Orleans Saints and everybody else, what happens in the first round with those LSU guys. Be a second round, I think that's when you see Foster Moreau go. I think that's going to be a very early second round pick. And I don't think the Saints would wind up wanting him, not because he's not a great player. No, I think he's definitely would be deserving of an early second round pick. I think it's just the fact that they've shored up their need on tight ends at this point. Again, I could be completely wrong and they wind up going all out on getting a tight end, be a lower range tight end as opposed to some of the other guys that are going to be available in this draft, is I feel like a lot of them are going to go in the first round, especially when Green Bay winds up picking where the Saints would be picking, because I believe an Iowa guy is going to wind up getting in that spot because they have two of them that are really, really good. It doesn't really matter which one. And then, you know, just looking ahead to day number two, the day I think all of us are going to be focusing in on, day two, Saints round two. I think if they don't trade up in that second round or whatever, because I think if they trade up, they're trading up in the third round, because you can wind up giving up some of those like little picks, your fifth and seventh round, where you've got a ton to work with. You can give up those picks and be able to try and work around it to where you get a third round pick, maybe even a couple third round picks, because we know some teams might have some compensatory picks there. That way you can wind up making some hay in day number two and be done with it, and then wind up having a lot of fun with Jazz Fest this weekend. A lot of things to keep an eye on with the Saints involved in the next couple of days. I got to say, that's going to be fun to see what happens this weekend with the Saints, the NFL draft. And I think the NFL draft in general is going to be a little interesting because, of course, I think the biggest story in that is Kyler Murray. Apparently, the guys in the desert, the odds of him being the number one pick have gone down like significantly. And that's weird to me. Maybe it's just the fact that we've got everything going on with the New Orleans, with the Oakland Raiders trade and all that stuff. But it's weird to see Kyler Murray be dropped down to the number one pick. It looks like we got somebody on the ARDCO equipment hotline. Now, full transparency, I'm the only one inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing, so I have no idea who's on the other side of the line. So we're going to get to it right now. Who's on the line?
What's up, C-Dizzle?
Frank, what's up, brother?
Just another day living the dream. I'm going to give you a blank page because I've been asked this question two or three times already.
All right.
Why don't the Saints draft more from LSU than they do? And I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right, Frank, you've pretty much opened up a can of worms here, and I don't even know the answer to that. You're bringing up why Saints haven't drafted a whole lot of LSU players, and they really haven't done that in the Sean Payton era. And I think that might be because of the fact that sometimes these guys get snatched up before the Saints even get a chance to kind of swing at them in terms of the value. I mean, we look at a couple of years ago, Lyle Collins, I believe, was one of the ones that a lot of Saints fans wanted to see get picked up. But he wanted to get picked up a couple of picks before Vidal Alexander. There's a lot of examples of that. I feel like it's just you haven't been able to hit on some of these guys in your spot because you don't want to do like a pick swap like one or two down the line. I feel like if you're going to trade, you're going to be trading up like 5 or 10 picks, and it just doesn't fit what they want. I think we're just going to start seeing more and more LSU players get picked up by the Saints. It's just all about the fact that I feel like that's what Sean Payton hasn't necessarily wanted. We look at what they have right now with the New Orleans Saints and their makeup. A lot of that is Ohio State University. Look around. Seriously, look around that roster. JT Barrett, Marshawn Lattimore. I can pretty much tell you like half of that secondary is from the Ohio State University. There is a lot of Big Ten flavor with that. And we know that sometimes when you think about coaches, they like to be associated with certain universities. I think Ohio State has been the place where they've gone more often than not. Michael Thomas is another one that can pop off, and I feel like they've worked quite well with that. They've been able to kind of almost have that be a feeder system, if you will. And with LSU, it's hard to say exactly why, but I think now that Coach O's at the helm, maybe that proverbial fence has been mended. I mean, we got to see Will Clapp the first time in forever a Saints player came from LSU via the draft. And I think that might be one of the few times that happens in the not too distant future when you look at the Saints. Because, I mean, look, unless you're in the top like 10 or so and you want to probably trying to get a guy like a Greedy Williams or a Devin White, I mean, Foster Moreau is just about the only other one I feel like in my mind is going to be going to the NFL within like the first 2 or 3 rounds of the draft, first 2 days. Outside of that, it's very hit or miss, and I feel like Will Clapp has a chance to be one of those guys that hits, but I'm not all in on him. I mentioned it yesterday during Ben's show. I'm not all in on Will Clapp being the starting center this year. He needs a little more time, a little more seasoning because of the fact that he is a lot younger of a guy, and it's a different ball game if you're a tight end as opposed to, you know, a running back. I think that's just always my perspective on things. But I appreciate the call, Frank, because it's hard to say. It's something I don't think anybody's necessarily asked Sean Payton why he hasn't drafted like LSU players consistently. It's probably just, you know, the chart doesn't show it at that point in time, especially in the later rounds, whenever it feels like that you can wind up getting some of those LSU guys. Again, I could be completely wrong here, but I just don't have the inside scoop when it comes to what's inside Sean Payton and the Saints organization's mind. Going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. We'll be back with more right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Hultberg Show. Clint Doman kind of doing some filling work for him today on this Thursday, April 25th, 2019. We'll talk with Frank Schwab about the NFL draft in a lot more detail in the next segment. But, of course, we got a lot more things to talk about, of course. Last night we had the NBA playoffs kind of have an interesting turn. Looks like the Warriors series, a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. The Clippers, I thought, would have wound up losing. But now it's a 3-2 series lead for the Warriors after the Clippers came away with a 129-121 win. And then the Rockets wrap up their series to start things off with the Utah Jazz. And I was definitely a little bit more surprised with the Rockets series because I thought that one would have wound up going 7 games rather than them go 4-1 in that series, winning 193 last night to cap things off. The way that they did, it just felt like maybe the Jazz could have made it a lot more interesting. But now we get the Rockets there in. Sadly, though, a lot of the first round of the NBA playoffs have been relatively blasé. You know, I just haven't been, like, enthralled with it. I've watched it almost every night because, to me, it feels like it's one of the only things that's on. But, of course, I'm also keeping an eye on what's going on in the world of hockey. I mean, how can I not keep an eye on what's going on there? Because round one has been amazing. Tons of overtime games, tons of intrigue. I mean, you had the number one seed, the team that won the President's Cup in the Tampa Bay Lightning, get bounced out in four games. That's a lot more interesting than what we've seen in the past, like, several years in the NBA, where it's been the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers the last 4 years. Now we get something different, but it's the Golden State Warriors versus somebody else. And that could be the recurring theme for the next couple of years. Of course, that is if we see Kevin Durant move over to the Eastern Conference, we see Draymond do whatever Draymond's going to wind up doing with his contract. It's definitely going to wind up seeing some fractures in the dynasty, but I still think it's going to be a thing to keep an eye on because I feel like the Warriors are always going to be a constant now because of the fact that they are just such an established team. And as long as Steph Curry's still there, Steph Curry's still healthy, I have to think that a franchise like that isn't necessarily going to go away anytime soon. They could wind up probably being a lot like the Boston Celtics were back in the 1960s with Bob Cousy leading the way, because they just have been able to be consistent and be able to get into the NBA Finals every single year for the last, like, what feels like forever. Feels like the last, like, 6 years they've been going into the NBA Finals, and nobody saw it coming, really. Nobody saw that coming. But, you know, now that it's starting to become the norm, I feel like the NBA playoffs have lost a lot of their luster, and this is going to be a very hot take for me. I don't normally try and go hot take on you, but, you know, on a day like today, I really have a decent take about something, and that is the NHL playoffs. I think they, like, so far, they've been a lot better than the NBA playoffs by, like, a mile. Because they've been a lot more fun. You've seen things be a lot more competitive, a lot more overtime games, a lot of, like, true dogfights. I mean, we look at some of these were just determined by one goal. None were really true blowouts, unless you want to count, like, again, the Lightning lost in four games, and that was a team that won the President's Cup and came virtually out of obscurity and were able to compete at a high level all season long, and then kind of see her up in the bed. I was kind of thinking they were, just because I think maybe the stage would get too big for them and they were going to wind up losing in the second round but weren't going to get to the Stanley Cup. They did not. They wound up looking like absolute garbage once postseason play started. And the Caps lost last night. That was a wild one. Again, I know people don't necessarily care a whole heck of a lot about hockey in our neck of the woods, not as much as they used to back when the ice skaters were in town. But I feel like I enjoyed what I've seen of hockey in the postseason than I enjoyed the playoffs. And I think I watched the second round of the playoffs a lot more intently than I would have any other time, because of the fact that these series have gotten a lot more interesting. There's been more parity in the league now than it had been, let's say, in the past, like, 5 years. Things have kind of turned things around, and I have absolutely enjoyed everything about it, because this tells me there is a lot of intrigue with what's going on with the future of the NBA. Everything's set up the way it is. I want to see what the NBA does with these super teams, what happens going forward. I wish I could have had on my guy Grant Hughes, but I feel like that's a long-form discussion for another day. And trust me, I want to get into this conversation, what's going to happen with Anthony Davis, because, of course, Dave Griffin wants to keep him, but that feels like it's a pipe dream and a half. The guy wants to get out of here, and if you want to get one guy out of there, this is a guy that needs to be on the first train, plane, automobile out of New Orleans. Send him off to wherever he doesn't really want to be, because he doesn't have, like, a true trade destination. He's not, like, saying, either you ship me off to Los Angeles or just don't at all. Basically, he wants out no matter what. So why not try and send him off somewhere where you can wind up getting some really good quality? And I feel like the biggest thing is, I got to say, I think Boston could be the ideal spot for him because you'd be able to get some immediate pieces that can wind up going – you wind up going from the outhouse, not necessarily to the penthouse, but you can go from the outhouse and into contention and be able to be consistent contenders to where it makes the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana look like a basketball city and makes it a lot more marketable to get another piece in there to potentially try and break through that glass ceiling of the Western Conference and maybe, just maybe, try and finally get into the finals for a shot at the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Is it a 5-10-year plan? Of course. It has to be like a long-term plan to be able to pull this off because I feel like the state of Louisiana likes basketball, but they're not necessarily all in on it because the basketball that has been presented, especially in the professional ranks, hasn't been great, you know? And also it helps, it doesn't help matters that this is largely a football and baseball state. Look at LSU, look at UL, look at Tulane, even look at La Tech. These are football and baseball programs that have consistently competed, even softball. When you look at UL and Tulane, UL and LSU, I think that it tells you everything you need to know about the business. So, yeah, I just think that this is going to be a big thing. I want to see what happens going forward with the NBA, what happens there, and see what the Pelicans can do going forward. Because the NBA playoffs, I enjoy them, but they become boring to me. They become background noise. Like, I've had games on, but I haven't necessarily like actively watched them. I'm doing other things. I'm taking care of other stuff for the station and other stations in this cluster. I haven't enjoyed this nearly as much as I thought I would have. But we're gonna go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.
Whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Oh, it is time for the NFL Draft. Clint Dumming here, filling in for Jordy Holtberg today on the aforementioned Jordy Holtberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com. And to do that, we got to talk to our guy who covers the NFL unlike any other for the Shutdown Corner as part of Yahoo Sports, and that is Frank Schwab. What's going on, Frank?
Yeah, it was good.
It is a great Thursday. It is draft day. And you know, we got to start things off at the very, very top, that number one pick. And it's amazing to think, like, we talked about it for months on end about how Kyler Murray seemed to be the number one pick. And now the guys over in the desert have actually dropped down the odds of him being the number one pick down to plus 200. At one point, I believe it was like plus 2,000. The dude was just through the roof as the strong favorite. Why the change?
You know, I think that there's just, I don't know if the Cardinals are doing this purposely. Look, let's get something straight. I don't buy for a second that they don't know what they're doing with the first pick. Like, if they don't know, like, we're sitting here, what, 3.5 hours before the draft, and they don't know who they're picking first overall, that's kind of a bad thing. That's not a really good sign for that organization. So I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they do know who they're going to pick more than 3 hours before the draft. And then what are they doing? Like, what? Had the first pick, they don't need smoke screens. They could take whoever they want. Maybe they're still trying to set up a trade. I don't even know. Maybe it's just like we're just having fun with this and seeing what people say about us. It's so weird though. I mean, I'm trying to think back. In the last few years, it's been a little different in that we weren't positive who was going to be the first pick. Like, you know, I mean, we get to this point, all right, the reports are out there, Baker Mayfield's going to be the first pick, or some of these other picks where it was kind of in discussion for a long time, but then we knew. I'm sitting here right now. I don't know who the first pick is. I think it's Kyler Murray. I mean, it'd be kind of amazing if it's not. It would be unprecedented, really, if it's a surprise, if they just get up there and grab Quinnen Williams, or none of us see it coming. I don't think that's ever happened in at least the modern NFL draft. So I'm perplexed by all this. It's obviously very entertaining and amusing. And again, like by this point in the draft process, we always know who's going number one. But this year, I don't know. I thought it was Kyler, and now I'm not sure.
So you brought up Quinnen Williams. Would that be who you think it's going to be if it's not Kyler Murray? Because it feels like you're either going to go with the best offensive player, or you're going to go with the best defensive player if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you're not going to trade.
I think it's either Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa or Kyler Murray. I mean, I can't see the outside of those three. I mean, and that's pretty obvious. That's been kind of the case for months now, almost. If they prefer the edge rusher, Bosa, over Quinnen Williams, fine. I get that. I think Quinnen Williams is the best pure player in this draft, but edge rusher has a little more value, I guess. And you can, I mean, that's 50-50. You're flipping a coin at that point, and those two players are both really good. And, then, you know, so if they don't go Murray, and if they go Murray, I would understand it. Look, if I don't like the whole, I need to get my guy. Even though these two players are comparable, well, I need my guy because I don't want anybody else getting credit. I don't like that. But if you really, truly believe Josh Rosen maxes out as the 15th best quarterback in the NFL, but you think Kyler Murray has a chance to be an MVP someday, well, then, you know, I mean, I get it. I can understand that quarterback is the most important position in sports. And nobody ever, very, very few teams anyway, get the mindset of, let's double up at quarterback. Why not? It's that important. Look, we're in an era of quarterback where Ryan Tannehill made more money last year than J.J. Watt. I mean, if quarterback's that important, why not think out of the box? Why not get unconventional? Why not draft a guy in the top 10 2 years in a row trying to find an MVP-level guy? So a lot of different directions the Cardinals can go in here. I really don't know what they're going to do, but I'm very interested to watch.
I think all of us are extremely interested to watch, and we bring up Kyler Murray. We might as well bring up some of the other quarterbacks as well, potential landing destinations for them. A lot of people, and I don't understand why. I want you to kind of explain to me why kind of the consensus is amongst all these mock drafters that Daniel Jones could wind up being the next quarterback for the New York Giants and being picked at, what is it, 16, 17, as opposed to trying to go get a guy like a Dwayne Haskins at number 6. Why is that? Like, Daniel Jones doesn't necessarily pop off on the paper to me.
Maybe not, but maybe it does to them. I mean, it only takes one team, and we've seen this happen before, and there have been, you know, a scuttlebutt that the Giants really, really like this guy. He kind of has that Eli connection because he went to Duke where David Cutcliffe is the coach, and David Cutcliffe obviously is very tight with the Mannings and coaches them kind of in the off season. So let's say, and I don't even think it's crazy for them to do it number 6. Let's just go through a scenario. Let's say you're the New York Giants and you have Daniel Jones as your number 1 quarterback, or number 2 behind Kyler, whatever. Let's say you have him as your number 1 quarterback, and you really, truly believe this is the guy. This is a 15-year starter for us, like Eli. This is the guy who's going to make Pro Bowls. Do you gamble? Do you really want to gamble and wait till 17? And if you don't believe he's that guy, what are you doing drafting him at 17? You know what I mean? Like, so I think anything's possible with the Giants. I don't know if this is all smokescreen. I don't know if they, you know, if they're willing to gamble. If you think Daniel Jones is that guy, if he's the next Eli, you really, truly believe that. If the Cincinnati Bengals love him too or just haven't said anything and they draft him at 11, you have made a colossal decade mistake for your team. Now, I don't believe Daniel Jones is that guy, but Dave Gettleman might. I'm not an NFL general manager. So yeah. You want to stand on a table for a guy, do you gamble? Do you wait? I'd take him at 6 if I felt that way about him. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. They eventually have to get a quarterback. They screwed up last year. They should have got their quarterback last year. I love Saquon. Yeah. They should have got the quarterback last year. But here we are, and I think the Giants, Broncos, Bengals, Miami, these teams who kind of have this lingering quarterback question, they're all going to be really interesting to watch tonight.
They really will be, especially over the next few days, I feel like, talking right now with Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports. You brought up the Broncos. I feel that's an interesting segue because we know the Broncos have been very hit or miss when it comes to getting quarterbacks that can be consistent. But looking at their first-round pick, where do you think they wind up going here? Do they go quarterback, or are they going to wait for the second round where it feels like you still are going to wind up having probably some second-tier guys, i.e. a Will Greer, a Drew Lock can wind up dropping that far. There's some players out there that could wind up dropping down to the second round if you're the Denver Broncos, and you might wait a little bit longer to get that quarterback. So where do you think they wind up going here?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think the part of the Broncos' problem is they're trying to date and not marry that quarterback. I mean, we talk about, like, okay, who they screwed up on. Brock Osweiler was a late second-round pick. Paxton Lynch was a first-round pick, but he's 25th pick in the draft. I mean, quarterback is one of those things where you look historically, and the hit rates on these guys drops precipitously with each pick. I mean, it is – I don't even know why teams draft any quarterback in the third or fourth round. I mean, I get it. You're trying to hit the Dak Prescott lottery, the Russell Wilson lottery.
Yep.
But most of those picks are going to end up being Davis Webb and Kyle Lauletta and Mason Rudolph and Joshua Dobbs and the guys who you just immediately draft and you say, well, this guy's never going to take over for Eli Manning or Ben Roethlisberger. Why do we do that? So I think that If the Broncos do take a quarterback, they'd be smart to just do it at 10. Take a guy you like. Take a guy you really believe in. And if you don't believe in anybody, that's fine. Wait. I mean, you got Joe Flacco. It just isn't smart to reach on a quarterback you don't love. I do agree with that. Dave Gettleman said that last year. And I think Sam Darnold was that kind of quarterback he should have picked. But I do agree in theory, don't just reach on a quarterback because it's a quarterback. Be sure, because this is if you're drafting quarterback 10, that's a marriage. You're not dating anymore. You just got engaged. So be sure, and if the Broncos don't like anybody there, pass. And then take the best player available. They have so many needs, they could go a lot of different directions. I could see just about anything at 10 for them. So they're another interesting team to watch. But it's because, I'm based in Denver, and the scuttlebutt that they've liked Drew Locke has been here for 3 months, maybe even going back to the last season, actually. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Looking over the Oakland Raiders, Frank, I am blown away by what's going on with that front office right now. Mike Mayock, the draft expert, he kind of just sent everybody home after, before the draft even started, basically, hey, don't come back until after the draft, after we're done picking. And they've got three picks in the first round, and nobody knows what they're going to wind up doing. Is this the ultimate smokescreen of all time where John Gruden could wind up coming away looking like, coming out smelling like roses, basically?
He could. It's so interesting. The Raiders, you can talk me into any scenario with the Raiders right now. You could talk me into, hey, they gave up a boatload of picks to go up and get Kyler Murray. You could talk me into, they moved down, they found a trade partner to move down, and they're just going to stockpile picks because they have a lot of needs. Or they traded for a player who we don't see coming. Or they just sit there at 4 and draft somebody who's totally like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Jeffrey Simmons, I don't know. Somebody who nobody's mocking to them at 4. They are the wild card of this draft because they have the draft ammunition that thanks to the Mack and the Cooper trades to do basically anything. If they want to move up, easy to move up. If they want to sit right there, just take 4 guys in the top 35, they can do that. They can move back if they can find a partner. I think everybody's trying to move back. But it's a very interesting spot for the Raiders. And the fact that Gruden was so unpredictable last year, we have really no idea how Mayock plays into all this. It just makes him a total wild card. And any scenario seems to be on the table for the Raiders tonight.
Talking now with Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports. Moving towards more of the players in general, especially starting off with former LSU Tigers, Devin White. I feel like I put him in my mock at number 10 to go into the Denver Broncos because I feel like they have a big need for inside linebackers. But where do you think Devin White could wind up going in your mind?
I think that does fit. I think that would be a really great fit. I've seen him as high as 5. I think Tampa Bay drafts him 5. Whoever Tampa Bay drafts, I've seen him go there, and I believe it's 5. So he's that kind of difference maker. I don't love – look, I wouldn't be necessarily investing that kind of a pick into an off-the-ball linebacker anymore. I just think the game has changed. But if you are going to invest in that kind of a guy – that's the kind of guy you want to invest in. I mean, he is fantastic in every way, your prototypical three-down linebacker. We saw last year the impact Darius Leonard had on the Colts, and he was a second-round pick out of a small school, so it's a different deal. But just that kind of impact, if you get a playmaker like that at that position, it can totally change your defense. So I personally wouldn't draft him in the top 10 or Devin Bush either, but
I could at least understand it. I get that. And I could see him. I don't think he's dropping any less than 10. I think this is, again, if we're taking the positional value out of the mix again and just saying, okay, who are the best players in this draft? He's clearly one of the top 10 best players in my mind. So going to be very interesting to see which team just says, hey, you know, we want this guy. And I do think there's a good fit there with the Broncos if they go in that direction, because with Vic Fangio here, they just drafted Roquan Smith, the Bears did last year, about the same spot. I think it was 9 for Roquan. It'll be 10 for the Broncos. So you can kind of see the similarities and Vic Fangio wanting that kind of complete all-around middle linebacker in the middle of his defense.
And, you know, looking at the other LSU player that could very well go in that first round of the draft, I think Greedy Williams is a guy that I feel like has had a stock drop substantially. And it's weird to see, because I was checking out some other draft profiles and some people said he looked like he was overrated according to some execs. How crazy is that to have Greedy Williams, probably one of the best corners coming out of college football right now, be considered overrated and being dropped towards like your late 20s in late first round picks?
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you on this. I like him. I think he's a good player. I don't know if there's other stuff that people are worried about. It all seems like a little bit anyway of a Marcus Peters situation where Kansas City drafted him. I believe it was 22 overall, and everybody kind of said, wow, that's a really good fit. And he's probably good, pretty good. He was. He Pro Bowler. I mean, it didn't turn out well, but he did have some very good years for them. I think that that Greedy could be the type of guy that he's just one of those – he just comes off to me as one of those players who – he's going to start day one for whoever drafts him. And he's going to – I don't know if he's necessarily a Pro Bowl-level type of corner, but he could be a very valuable corner at a very valuable position. So I don't see it either. I'm kind of surprised if he does go in that range. But I think whoever does draft him down there, and it's going to be a good team because that's who drafts him, 20s and 30s, I think whoever drafts him down there is going to get a heck of a player and an instant kind of day one impact type of starter right away, which you always take when you're at that spot in the draft.
Last one for you, Frank, and I got to look over at the New Orleans Saints. They won't be picking until Friday, but what's the percentage in your mind that they could wind up trading up in the first round tonight?
And that's the problem. You can't keep doing this. Look, I didn't like their trade last year. It wasn't anything against Davenport. I like him as a player, but it was what do you do? You know, the kid out of San Antonio, obviously. You can't just keep trading future picks. If you want to get back into the first round, if you're the Saints tonight, okay, you got to trade for future first. Do you really want to keep doing that? I get it. There's an expiration date on Drew Brees now, and you want to maximize what you got with him. But I don't particularly like those type of moves unless it's for, like, a really, really good quarterback or, you know, I mean, something like that. I just don't prefer that kind of draft mentality of let's mortgage the future for today, because it's going to come back to bite you eventually. I didn't like the trade last year, although I did like the player. It's just one of those, you can't keep pushing, like almost like the Drew Brees contract, the cap number. You just can't keep pushing this off till the next day, because when it hits, it's going to hit hard. And so I don't but the Saints are, look, the Saints, I've written about this many, many times. The Saints are a very compulsive team. They're just so aggressive. They're a guy at the poker table you don't want to see, right? They're all in on every hand. It just doesn't, they don't stop and you know, there's no chill there. They're going all out all the time. And I kind of respect that too. But so we don't know. The Saints move up into the first round. Okay. It's the Saints. They kind of do that kind of stuff. But if I'm them, I just say, look, we just can't keep doing this. We, at some point, you just got to say, no, let's not keep mortgaging the future. Let's just sit at two and try to take a quality player.
I think that's where they need to be. Frank, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
All right. That was Frank Schwab. You can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. We'll go ahead and wrap up the show in a nice little bow. Hey, guess what? We got Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room coming up in just a little bit. But hey, guess what? Like I said, we got some more stuff coming up on this day in sports history and also some birthday wishes. And trust me, you're going to love today's, because I got a lot of fun facts for you on this wonderful Thursday afternoon right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever, as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show. Almost like saying the best of the Jordy Holtberg Show. It's so weird not being a best of. It's a live edition right now here on 103.7 Game Acadian, as number one sports station. Usually I have somebody kind of ringside with me, kind of chatting it up. I know we'll likely have Jeff Horchak back tomorrow to kind of wrap up the week, and then Jordy should be back on Monday dealing with some stuff at the moment. Not necessarily privy to mention it on air, but hopefully everything's going well for him, and he's getting everything taken care of, getting everything in order at this point in time. But, you know, Jordy likes to do something every single day at this time of day, and I absolutely love it. It's a history lesson, and we got some on this day in sports history stuff for you because we love dropping knowledge. We love fun facts here on 103.7 The Game, and I got some for you today, and we got to start things off. Back in 1965 on this day, the Boston Celtics won their sixth straight NBA championship, unprecedented, after beating the Lakers 129-96 and winning the overall series 4-1. And Sam Jones and Bill Russell both led the way with 22 points apiece in the win. I give credit to Basketball Reference for giving me that one because I could not have told you that before today. But again, on this day, 1965, Celtics won their sixth straight NBA title, and that was nothing short of impressive. Also on this day, 1947, all the way back then, going towards the world of pro wrestling, one of the more iconic names from back in the day, Lou Thesz beat Whipper Bill Watson in St. Louis, Missouri, to win the NWA, the National Wrestling Association, World Heavyweight title for the third time in his career, and would hold the title for over 200 days, but he would be recognized in some territories for over 300 days because he wound up having to drop the 10 pounds of gold due to a back injury in that match. And again, some territories actually consider him the winner. It's still the champion, which was weird, but okay. Looking over 1978, on this day, the Philly Fanatic, the iconic mascot, made his first ever appearance as the mascot for the Philadelphia Phillies. And the rest, as they say, was history for that. And then also in 2009, on this day, a Georgia Bulldog, Matthew Stafford, was the first pick by the Detroit Lions after they went 0-16 that previous season. And he had been the starting quarterback ever since. And also, this is something I recently found out about whenever I was trying to get some fun facts about Matthew Stafford. This is not so fun, but thoughts goes out to his family, as his wife, Carrie Stafford, back in the hospital, recently had brain surgery, so she's in the hospital at this moment. And if it's your birthday today, happy birthday. And you share it with the likes of iconic jazz singer, the late, great Ella Fitzgerald. Also, happy birthday. You'll share it with 79-year-old Al Pacino, the Godfather. Any given Sunday, Scarface, so many movies Al Pacino's been a part of over the years. All of them really, really good. Adam Silver turns 57 today. NBA commissioner. Also, Hank Azaria. You might know him from such shows as The Simpsons. His iconic voices as Mo Sizzlak, the bartender, Chief Wiggum, Dr. Nick Apu, even though that character, I believe, has been retired because reasons. And then other iconic characters. And then Jim Brockmeyer from the TV series Brockmeyer, which you haven't checked out. It is amazing. And speaking of Brockmeyer, one of the guest stars on that in the first season was Joe Buck, who turns 50 years old today. And he is an overrated commentator. Hot take coming at you to wrap up the show. A little shade, if you will, towards Joe Buck turning 50 years old today, commentator for the NFL on Fox and MLB. He's better at baseball than he is at football, but that's not really saying that much. Like I said, overrated commentator. I think Jim Brockmeyer would agree with me. Maybe not so much other people. You know, it is what it is. That's what happens when we have opinions. I'm out of here. Have a great rest of your Thursday afternoon. Keep it locked right here because we got Bumper to Bumper Sports coming up in just a few. And we got even more sports talk coming at you on 103.7 The Game. So, in the words of Jordy Holtberg, stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.